This is Alicia Bales. The primary election is coming up on Tuesday, March 3rd, when Mendocino County voters will fill three open seats on the Board of Supervisors, the 1st and the 2nd and the 4th districts. Tonight on KZYX, we'll continue our special local election series, interviewing candidates running for county supervisor one-on-one with time for your calls. You can hear these interviews live evenings through tomorrow night from 6 to 6:30, and you can also listen to archives of all of the candidate interviews we've done on the Elections 2020 page at kzyx.org and on the jukebox as well. I'm going to begin by asking the candidate a few questions at 10 after. I'm going to open the phone line so you can call in and ask a question directly yourself of the candidate. And the studio line here is 895-2448. That's 895-2448. And you can, as I said, call with a question directly. Callers will have a maximum of 1 minute to ask their question. Please have questions ready and refrain from commentary so we can hear from as many callers as possible. Also, as always, keep it about issues, no personal or ad hominem attacks. Tonight, I'll be talking with John Kennedy, who is running for supervisor in the 1st District. He's running against Glenn McGordy, James Green, and John Sackowitz. Welcome, John.
Welcome.
That's it.
Hello, Mendocino. Thank you.
All right. Let's take a moment to have you introduce yourself and tell us why you're running.
Okay. Well, my name is John Kennedy. I feel kind of like Wolfman Jack right here. That'll test some of the age of the audience. Almost 22 years ago, my wife and our one-year-old moved to Mendocino County, and we have since grown to, two more children. We have Connor Carter Aaron. We have a daughter-in-law, Kenzie, and a grandson, Carson. So we have Connor Carter Aaron, Kenzie, and Carson. In 2008, we decided to move up to the mountains to be closer to our parents. One thing led to the other, and I ended up getting elected county supervisor. It was the most challenging job I have ever had. It was the most challenging job I've ever had because the decisions we make as county supervisor really affect a lot of people. In Plumas County, it was essentially 20,000 lives that we would affect. So I had to make sure I tried to get it right. And in Mendocino County, of course, we have 90,000 lives we will affect, hopefully positively here. After my term, we decided that it was best for us to move back to Mendocino County. So we decided to move back to Mendocino County about 2014 and 15. And here we are. It was a great move. Glad we did it. And a few other things led to a few other things, and now I'm running for county supervisor.
And tell us about your relationship with the 1st District.
My relationship with the 1st District, well, it started back in 98, when you have kids, that's the glue of fellowship with friends, and that's how we find friends. And we have some of the most wonderful friends that we've had for over 20 years from Redwood Valley and Ukiah area. And most recently, my relationship has been really up close with the fire survivors of Redwood Valley and some in Potter Valley. It's been a long 2 years. I was hired as a disaster case manager because I had some subject matter expertise in some of the things that the fire survivors were going through. And some of the fire survivors ended up kind of being fire victims dealing with FEMA, local government, state government, building and planning. And I'm kind of the buffer zone for some of them and dealing with pulling permits and going through their building process and their recovering process and their mental health. And we've shed a lot of tears together. And now I have a nonprofit that I started that I run. It kind of runs me. It's a true nonprofit. We're not disaster capitalists. When we're done here in Mendocino County, we'll be done unless we play a role in the housing down the road.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's jump right in. I'm going to ask you a few questions, and then at 10 after, we'll open the phone lines. You have a lot of hands-on work rebuilding the homes of survivors of the Redwood Complex fire, right? Tell us how that work. You've given us a little bit of a taste of what that's been like, kind of, you know.
Yeah, I'll kind of roll it out quickly how it started.
But I'd like to know what kind of view that gives you as a supervisor. How would that affect your work as a supervisor from having worked with all of these people who lost so much?
Yeah, well, a lot of it started with, so as a county supervisor, you deal with a lot of the departments that that you have to deal with. We have a $300 million budget, and most of it's health and human services and law enforcement and probation. But a part of it is also building and planning and environmental health and mental health. That's part of that big part of the budget. There were, you name it, fire survivors had to go through it. With dealing with a lot of them were mostly underinsured, if they were insured at all, and they had to become general contractors overnight. So I watched the agony of folks going in as policies were changing, and sometimes there was a lack of communication in the building and planning department. And I got to say that most of the folks in the building and planning department were really concerned with helping. There were just some disconnects, and I was you know, kind of the liaison along with a couple of the case managers. I want to take all the credit for helping these folks. One of the things that I was not mostly, but in the back of my mind, I was always concerned with there was always health and the mental health of these fire survivors, and it still is going on. I really want everyone to know that. It was 2 years ago, but there are still people homeless, literally homeless, waiting for homes to be built. I just wanted to throw that back in there. But the county, I don't believe, did their job in outreach with the mental illness aspect of what was going on for these folks. So we've had some sessions.
You're talking about trauma?
Yeah, trauma. And I had to become a pseudo-professional therapist, whether it was hanging out in the back of a pickup, leaning over, having a beer with someone, or whatever it might be. We all just kind of tried to pull the weight of what the county probably should have been doing more of.
Do you think the county has a role to play in that? Could it have made it easier for survivors of the fire?
Absolutely. And so I don't want my comments to be misinterpreted that the county didn't care and wasn't compassionate enough to help. The county did spend some resources to help, but I think maybe I'm unfair in my castigation, possibly, because I was so upfront and close and personal because that was my job. So I might be a little critical of what could have been done, but it's mainly because I put no boundaries on myself. And I accepted phone calls. I still do, all day, all night, Sundays, Saturdays. But maybe there are a few more people at the county could have been more concerned.
Well, and as a supervisor, you would be able to take that role. You would be able to make those changes first person.
I would be able to suggest improvements, and four other board members and department heads would hopefully collaborate with some of those. And you know, as a county supervisor, you kind of rely on other county supervisors' area of expertise. We did this when I was in Plumas County. I was the budget guy, and another guy was a water guy. So I got kind of lazy on the water. I relied on him, and everyone relied on me for budget. So as a county supervisor, we've all got our areas of expertise, and that will be part of mine.
All right. You've been outspoken during the campaign about the need for essential services, especially fire department funding. And as we know, ambulance services in the county are precarious due to funding as well. How would you, as a supervisor, define these problems for the voters, and what are your proposals for solutions?
Okay. Well, that's I'm glad you asked it that way, because I really get tired of watching solutions get created to problems that haven't been identified. I think the problems are identified. They have been for years. I used to be a volunteer firefighter and paid years ago. I've been on several thousand calls. I understand flipping pancakes and doing fundraisers. 30 years ago, we held our own, but the demand was high. But it's not as high as it is now. I think local county government has kind of ignored and maybe taken for granted rural volunteer fire departments and fire districts. And those are kind of the essential services. Even though the county government is responsible for certain essential services, mostly health and human, law enforcement, public safety, we've only barely acknowledged the services that local fire and EMS. We haven't taken it seriously. I would like to see, there's only one thing I really want to change, a paradigm shift all over the state, maybe in this county, some counties already do. I want the local fire districts to be part of the budget process in a bigger way than Prop 172, 30 grand here and there. I want them to be involved, paid more funding so they can be more involved in the communities to help with the education, defensible space, weed abatement, and all those things, instead of relying on education and shaming people into doing it. We need boots on the ground, hands-on people.
All right, great. One more question before I open the phone lines. It's a small question about the Potter Valley Project. Of course, in your district, in District 1, the Potter Valley Project is the big issue, so we have to talk about it. On your website, you say that you support the efforts of the community trying to keep the project going because of the importance of the water, of course. But if the issue was simply about water, it probably would have been figured out a long time ago. What do you see are the biggest challenges with the Potter Valley Project and the Eel River Dams? How would you work with Jared Huffman's ad hoc committee and that new consortium of local groups that's coming together to balance the needs of the Eel River and the Russian River stakeholders, including
just a tiny question?
Fish, I know,
yeah,
and just
a tiny question.
30 seconds or less, please.
That sounds reasonable. Of course, I am going to support the efforts of the local people. That would be a real dumb thing to say if you're running for office and if you meant something else. But I sincerely mean that. There are parts to this issue. To answer the question, what do we have to do going forward? We have to figure out where the money's coming from. We have all these educational outreach meetings going on, these town hall meetings that Janet Pauley, brilliant lady, understands this better than I will. I don't even want to recite stats and all this to pretend I'm part of that effort in the past. I just want to support them going forward. So we understand that we have, I probably don't remember all of them, but we have Caltrout, we have the Round Valley Tribe, we have the Sonoma Water Agency, we have the Mendocino County Inland and Water District. And there's something else out there.
There's Humboldt County.
Humboldt County, yeah, Humboldt County. That's the place up there. You always forget that streams go up sometimes and
there's a
down.
Big stream, yeah. The Eel River.
There's this big river.
Their river gets diverted into the Russian, right?
So as I'm watching this, and I haven't been, I'm a very busy person with the building, the recovery, and I don't get to go out and campaign as much as I would like to, and sit in on a lot of these meetings because I have I just have some other responsibilities with kids and commitments to rebuild homes. But what I can generally say is we need to ultimately deal with the compromises that's going to have to happen, and I'm a mediator and an arbitrator. I have a few thousand hours in mediation. So I am actually pretty talented and skilled and experienced in resolving disputes and coming up with solutions between disputing parties. It is a reason we have two ears and one mouth. I try to listen to all and come up with reasonable solutions. But it's going to be money. It's seriously going to be money. We have to acknowledge that we do have an endangered species threat that we can't ignore. Water is important. Unfortunately, years and years and years ago, between, this may sound kind of kooky for me, but between capitalism and human desire to make so much money and the ravage of rivers and streams and tribal communities, it's just kind of sad that we've resulted in where we are. But it is, where we are is where we are. And I don't really support tearing down any dams. I support any good compromise that makes us all happy. We need the steady flow. We just need to convince other users of our water, south of, in Redwood Valley, Potter Valley, Calpella, Sonoma County, Marin County, that they're going to have to pay somehow. We got to tap into federal and state funds. And I know those doors are open. I mean, maybe there's some Prop 1 money too. I don't know, but it's going to take money. And I have faith. I really do have faith that there is a strong effort on all parties to make this work.
All right. Well, as promised, I want to open the phone lines. The phone number here in the studio is 895-2448. That's 707-895-2448. My name is Alicia Bales. I'm here in the studio with John Kennedy, who is a candidate for First District Supervisor. And we do have, caller, you've been calling for the whole time, and now I'm turning to you and you've hung up. So caller, give a call back, 895-2448. But the phone lines are open. There you are.
My fault, probably.
Not at all. Good evening, caller. You're live on the air.
Hi. I want to make sure that future representatives choose a more humane method for wildlife management. I'm very disappointed in our current representatives and how they've made their decisions. I feel that my tax money is going to subsidies that are going to ranchers who are the main supporters of lethal animal management. And I really don't think that that's any different than giving it to tobacco companies, alcohol industries, gun sales. And if you would permit me to give you some statistics that really
I'm
going
to actually ask you to ask your question, please.
To ranchers. What's that?
Go ahead and turn it into a question. We want to get as many questions on tonight as we can.
Well, I want to know, in the future, are you going to choose a more humane method for wildlife management and put subsidies towards something that is beneficial to the public and not just to personal private businesses?
All right. Thanks for the question, caller.
So generally, I do not support taxpayer funds to subsidize any private sector business, with some exceptions, and I can't even think of them right now. So I'm with you on that. I'm also with you. I do not enjoy, and I think, and I've grown up with farmers and ranchers. I used to milk cows in the morning before I went to high school. I truly feel that most would rather see a non-lethal method of eradicating whatever threat they might have. That being said, I do want to talk about this particular IWDM contract. There's still a little hope. I want to refresh. There was a settlement between different groups in the county that suspended the program about three years ago or so. I'm probably wrong on the dates, but it was suspended. One of the requirements of the settlement was for the county to have an EIR done to certify the EIR. So on the December 17th action, the county approved and certified the EIR. I heard another candidate one time say that person wished that we would have only had a one-year contract. Well, I don't even know where that information came from, because we don't have a contract yet. The program is still suspended. So that EIR that was certified allowed, I mean, naturally, the next step is to look at a contract. But that contract is still going to come forward. So the public still has, and the public is very passionate about this, compassionate and passionate. And there's still an opportunity to look at the contract and speak our piece. I do not like, well, I don't think anyone does, but I can't stay. I am depressed when I hit a squirrel accidentally. So
that's good.
Some people aren't.
I
understand the desire to use non-lethal methods whenever we can.
Right.
And I think most are, honestly.
Well, and the way I understood the process of the draft EIR is that there were other options rather than contracting with Wildlife Services. There were other non-lethal options, and the Board of Supervisors voted to certify the lethal option on the draft EIR.
They supported the draft EIR certification with the declarations that were in the EIR, which would include lethal
hiring Wildlife Services.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I always think of these critically. Right now, you know, something has to be done. Do we really think the ranchers are just ignoring it and not taking matters into their own hands? I don't know. Which is better?
So. All right. The number to call is 707-895-2448. That's to get right into the studio and ask John Kennedy a question directly. Listeners out there, 707-895-2448. And we have heard a lot about this Wildlife Services contract. It's become quite a big campaign issue, along with the issue of Measure V. So at every forum, we hear about these issues. And I'm encouraged that people are this engaged in the process, and I'm encouraged, too, that we have another phone call.
Okay.
Good evening, caller. You're live on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I want to ask John Kennedy if he would consider, first of all, there's a proposed transient occupancy tax to fund help from the fire departments. This is one of the only counties that doesn't have its own logging tax. I was wondering if you would consider a per log tax, you know, 10 or 20 bucks a log to help from the fire departments.
All right. Thanks for that question.
I can't answer that question because, of course, that's going to take some thought process, some math, some discussions. But I think there are opportunities within the current budget. When we determine what our priorities are, to actually fund fire departments right now without an additional tax. So that's an interesting concept that you brought up. I'd like to learn more about it. I'm a nobody right now. I'm just a candidate. I don't sit on the board. I have no influence whatsoever. But I would like to see any opportunity to fund local fire departments. But I really do feel that another tax measure isn't necessary. Can I talk about the current tax measure right
the TOT?
Now? With the TOT.
Sure.
So I normally support almost blindly, which is a really bad thing to do, any efforts to fund local fire departments. It might be because of my own experience, but I know that the services they provide are very important. What I don't like are advisory measures that kind of skirt around the rule of the majority 2/3 vote to make it work. I feel that that the current board is on board, literally, to make sure that they satisfy and they fulfill the promises of funding the local fire departments. But when you have an advisory measure that isn't stipulated for a specific purpose, down the road you could run into problems.
All right. Oh, we have another caller. Call back. Caller 707-895-2448.
I promise now that I'll watch that phone, and when it comes up, I'll shut up so we can answer the phone. Okay. I apologize for that.
We have our little timers going here, too, but it doesn't seem
I'll watch the red thing.
Were you... All right. Call back. Caller 707-895-2448 is the number. I'm Alicia Bales in the studio with John Kennedy, who is a candidate running for First District Supervisor. And you are live on the air.
Hi, I really want to thank Mr. Kennedy, for your talking about the fire survivor experience. I'm a fire survivor, and I am so grateful that you're bringing awareness of the problems forward. And my question to you is, why isn't it more clear? Do you have an idea of why it isn't more clear within the recovering county governments that it is to the benefit of the county for people to rebuild? And why has it not been easier to get county support for rebuild?
Well, I don't know that it's not clear that the need is required. So let's just set aside all the emotional and the real human stuff and talk about money. It's clearly a priority to get homes rebuilt so we can get back on the tax roll and we can fund our essential services that we're supposed to fund. I can't answer the question for a lot of folks in the county, and I truly believe that most people I've worked with really, really, really do care. I don't know that they've been given the tools, and these are staff folks given the tools by some management to help make it easier for the fire survivors. As a disaster case manager for the last 2 years for NCO, I have tried, along with one of our other disaster case managers, Eva, to make it easier. We have been the buffer zone for many of the fire survivors in all aspects, whether it's dealing with a mortgage company, dealing with FEMA. I'm still dealing with FEMA right now from someone asking one of our fire survivors for their money back for an absurd reason, and we don't have time to get into it. But we are trying our best with the limited resources we have, but I don't put boundaries on myself. The phone rings all the time and I answer questions. So it can be better, and I guess hopefully we don't have any more disasters, but if we do, we learned.
And what's a specific example of something the county could have done or should do in the future? Because, yeah, we might not be done by a long shot.
You know, I'm not even going to try to find something bad. What I can tell you that this county has done that's better than other counties. There was an issue with septic. Other counties were requiring some absurd requirements to have folks have all their septic inspected and then spend tens of thousands of dollars fixing it. This county was smart enough to realize that common sense will prevail. And most folks are not going to hook up their new house to a failed septic system because it'll only take a day to realize that's bad. So they have done a good job in that regard. I just feel that communication when policies change and declared ordinances change and administrative processes change, that the message doesn't get to the line staff quick enough, but it gets to me, and then I have to have an argument at the counter. But it all works out.
All right. Number here is 707-895-2448. This is your chance to call in and ask John Kennedy questions. He's a supervisor candidate in the 1st District. And my name, of course, is Alicia Bales, and this is KZYX. So I have a question. I haven't had a chance to ask any of the other candidates, and it's about race and race? Communities of color here in Mendocino County. All of the candidates are white. And all of the people sitting on the Board of Supervisors are white. But we have communities, Native American communities here that are definitely an integral part of the community and a huge Latino population. So
I think that's a problem. I see there's a call, but I think that's a problem. And I'd like to actually see more women in government as well. But there's a call, and I want to answer that, but let's do the call.
Okay, we'll put a pin in my question. Okay. All right, hey, caller, you're live on the air. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hi, it's you.
Oh, good. You didn't sound real clear to me. Yeah, I would like to second what one of the previous callers said about the difficulty of recovering from fires, and I would like to broaden it in two ways. One is that we were victims of a limited disaster. Some of the people in the big fires got breaks from the county on some of the regulations and some of the costs. But I think we live in this is not suburban standard 1950s America anymore. We're living in an age of climate change, and there's a variety of different kinds of disasters. And I don't think the people who are victims of big disasters should be prioritize over people who just happen to be victims of small disasters.
Do you have a question? And
I think I know your question.
I need a little background here to make this question make sense. That's about it. Basically, the county and the planning and building process was nothing but a hindrance for us, starting with this idea that you have to have a building permit to get a permit to live in a trailer.
It's going to have to become a question. You got about 10 seconds.
Well, my question for the supervisor is, can we revise the structure of ordinances, this network, there's too many of them, so that they are more humane and more adaptable to people who are in trouble?
All right.
Okay, I understand what you're coming from, and I think I know who you are and where you live, because I think we've spoken before. When there's a federally declared disaster, there is more resources, there's more money, there is more services available. That's the math about it. But I believe that we can take some of the administrative policies that were implemented because of the disaster and actually apply those to folks who lost their home, even if it's just one single structure fire. I agree with that. I agree that we should probably treat any structure fire or loss of everything, property and everything you have, the same for one person as we do for the other. We just don't have all the federal resources to do that.
All right. We have come to the end of the half an hour. Amazing. It always flies by. So I would like to ask you, John Kennedy, your candidate for the 1st District Supervisor race here. Do you have any closing remarks, maybe about involving Native American communities and Latino communities?
Well, I know that we all look like we're Caucasian. I'm just going to say this because it's the fact. I do have an 8th registration of Maidu Miwok in my blood. We're registered with the state. I did work with the Northern Circle Indian Housing Authority as their construction manager, so I'm very aware of tribal communities' housing requirements and their federal funding through NAHASDA dollars. I wish there were more people that represented the everyone. But let me tell you something. One of the reasons I was a good supervisor and I will be a good supervisor is because my life experiences are very involved. Most times when I make a decision, I can have a common ground with the other person, and I'm not joking. It's kind of a running joke with family and friends that, oh, you did that too. So that's what really helps me be a well-rounded person to do this job.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you coming in to talk with us. Thanks so much. And all of you for calling in. You can hear the archive of this program at kzyx.org on our Elections 2020 page. Tune in tomorrow night, same time, same place, 6 o'clock here on KZYX, when the candidate will also be from the 1st District. We'll be talking with John Sakowicz.